Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. Welcome back to AI and the Future of Work. Thanks again for making this one of the most downloaded podcasts about the future of work. If you enjoy what we do, please like, comment, and share in your favorite podcast app. And we'll keep sharing great conversations like the one we have today. I'm your host, Dan Turchin, advisor at Insight Finder, the system of intelligence for IT operations, and CEO of PeopleRain, the AI platform for IT and HR employee service. We've discussed how new technologies are impacting every phase of the employee lifecycle, from recruitment to candidate evaluation to onboarding, training, performance management, and even offboarding. We've heard from innovators like Brian Talabi from Ahura and Panos Yozos from LearnWorlds about the need for better ways to help employees upskill and reskill for new jobs being created by automation. In fact, 40% of global employees say they struggle to learn new skills at work, according to the Randstad Work Monitor 2020 report. We're all looking ahead and wondering what the new employment landscape will look like when we as humans coexist with machines in a workplace where AI is ambient. I've said on this show, and I'll repeat it again, AI will be a net creator of jobs for humans. And those on the right side of innovation now will be the ones leading the most successful organizations in a decade. Well, today we get to explore all of these topics with a real expert in space. Rene Steenvoorden studied international business administration at Erasmus University in Rotterdam, and he joined HR leader Randstad in 2016 as their global chief digital officer, where he also serves on their executive board. Prior to joining Randstad, Rene was the CIO at Rabobank, a leading Dutch cooperative bank, where he was responsible for IT, global innovation, and large digital transformation programs. Before that, he had a distinguished career in tech leadership roles at places like McKinsey and Procter & Gamble. Rene's been elected CIO of the Year twice. I encourage you to follow him. He's at rsteenvoorden on Twitter. And without further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome Rene to the podcast. Rene, let's get started by having you share a little bit more about your background and how you got into the space.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dan. And I'm very honored to be on your show. I looked at all your guests, and it's a very impressive list. So I'm thankful to be one of them. And it's a fascinating space, the future of work, and especially the influence of AI, two of my big passions coming together. But like you said, I've worked in many different companies, and the common theme is that I like where business and IT meet each other. So I'm all about applying technology in a business environment. I care less about how the technology works exactly. I'm very interested in how to make the tech successful in the marketplace. And that's what I've been doing in all kinds of different jobs, starting in IT, when IT was very much the function in the seller. And to my big delight, over the couple of years, it became more and more strategic. And nowadays, you know, I don't think there's many board members that would say that digital is not important. So it's a great area to be in the tech leadership role, because we are so much part of the overall strategy. And the HR space is just, you know, a beautiful place to be, because at the end of the day, work is such a big part of our happiness. And being able to help people finding the right jobs, or companies to find the right talent, and to see them prosper and be happy with each other, that's one of the most interesting and things you can do, and really has society impact. So here I am.
You have been a two-time CIO of the Year. Now, the role of the CIO is notoriously short in tenure. What is it that makes the role of the CIO so difficult?
Yeah, well, and like we just discussed, the role evolved a lot, and nowadays you need to be both tech savvy, but you also need to be business oriented, and digital really moved that role of CIOs, CDOs, CTOs, whatever acronym you use. We really moved that role to the forefront of the transformation of, I would say, all organizations, and then the pandemic made those transformations even more crucial. Everybody had to jump on the digital ship, if you want, to get people to work from home and to do digital sales and to get your e-commerce in order. So it's fascinating, but it's also complex because you have to do that with that business mindset, that tech mindset. There's budget constraints, there's compliance and legislation, all thrown in together. And I love it. I'm still equally excited about it as nearly 30 years that I started it. But it is complex. So it's I'm thankful to have a great team here at Randstad to support me with that.
So in the US alone, in the fourth quarter of 2021, 13 million workers quit their jobs, and that gave rise to this somewhat now cliched term, the Great Resignation. Mm-hmm. So as you're coaching leaders about the importance of taking care of your people to avoid the stem of workers quitting, mm-hmm. what's your coaching and what role does technology play in delivering better employee experiences?
Well, it's certainly real. I would say it's not really new, because if you look at the underlying trends, the scarcity of talent was already very visible before the pandemic. But now that the pandemic is past its peak, hopefully, knock on wood, we do see this massive amount of people moving. It's at the end of the day, it's all about retention, right? Can you provide your talent the right experience? Can you be truly personally engaged with them? And that means that you have to understand what you need to do as a company, how the best people fit, what the kind of best candidate can bring to the table, and then engage with that talent, not only during the recruitment, also during the onboarding and continuously. So really have attention for all of your talent, whether it's internal or external, because it's such a fluid market space nowadays. And take a broad mindset. The companies that are able to recruit in different states and let people work in a hybrid context, for example, are currently doing very well, because they certainly have a way bigger market to source from. But if you're stuck in the way you worked before and you don't want to expand or broaden your strategic mindset as an HR leader or as a leader of a company, then life is tough. So it's real, but think about experience and think about true, deep understanding and really work on not only attracting people, but also, of course, developing them and keeping them and use different sourcing options.
For job seekers, what do you think is the impact of the digital experience that they have with prospective employers on their, call it, enthusiasm or interest in mm-hmm. signing up with a new organization?
Yeah, well, we all value customer experience nowadays as part of your any digital experience. So, it's only understandable that people want to have the same experience in applying for a job as they would buying shoes or stuff like that. But the reality is very different. It's very antiquated sometimes, the recruiting experience, and also people feel that it's only there for you when you when there's a perfect match, and otherwise, well, thank you, but we'll find somebody else. That's something we really want to change. So we invest heavily into customer experience and things like a better search and matching algorithm and chatbots, but really deeply connecting with that kind of modern experience that people expect. We use chatbots to reduce what we call the black hole of recruiting, where you do get an automatic receipt of your resume, but then you'd never hear from it again, right? Horrible. So we want to make sure that when you engage with us, your chatbot does some quick checking, saying, look, Dan, great that you're interested. Can you carry 10 kilos because the job needs that? And if you say no, then we'll offer something different, but you don't have to go through the whole process and only to be let known after a while that, unfortunately, you didn't fit the criteria. So you want to do some quick checks. And then we offer, for example, self-scheduling interviews so people can book themselves directly into the agenda of the consultant, so we don't lose any time. And then the day after, you immediately are in agenda with the consultant, talking about the right things and not checking stuff that we could have done before. That's typically kind of a modern experience we're aiming for. And I think that's also what the clients nowadays expect from us.
I love that vision for the digital experience. And I love the example that you gave of using the chatbot to be able to provide a more human experience. one of the things we talk about a lot on this show is the irony that we're actually using chatbots to make the experience more human, right? Yeah. More responsive, you know, more engaging. Now, you gave example of, you know, can you carry 10 kilos? If you can't, maybe we'll find a better fit for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That implies that applicants applying for, let's say, you know, a job that involves a lot of manual labor are prepared to adopt the digital experience that you're hoping that, you know, will modernize their job search. Mm-hmm. What do you do when there's a mismatch between potentially the technology being ahead of where of the digital experience that your market, that your perspective or your job seekers are prepared for?
Well, of course, it's a very differentiated marketplace, because we tend to think that LinkedIn is the only view of the world, but those are, of course, mostly white collar, and also in most, not all sectors are equally represented. And if you take blue collar, for example, that's a very hot market space too. If the number of truck drivers and forklift drivers and all those kind of logistics oriented jobs required is huge, and scarcity is also real there. But technology is different in such a market. I was in one of our branches in Boston, North Andover, and where we just launched, amongst others, our chatbot. And I was interviewing people, and hey, we like it, what do you think about it? And I noticed a big stack of paper on their desk. I said, well, what are we doing with paper? I said, well, we still have a lot of candidates. They don't have a resume. So they come to us with their paper, and we help them to create a resume. So we have to avoid oversimplifying or overthinking the skills that people have. But on the flip side, everybody has a mobile phone nowadays. Everybody can use Facebook. Everybody knows how to do an email. So we create, for example, with the chatbot, ways to create resumes. So we help people to get into that process. And on the flip side, we have very advanced users where we can help them to do different skills. So we have solutions that they can augment their skills, and we connect to the Udemy's of those roles so they can augment their market value. So it takes all kinds of different profiles, right? We have to serve the whole world, not just one segment. And the skills are very different per segment, of course.
One of the challenges of using any kind of AI technology to make machine-driven or automated recommendations is that there's the potential for bias to creep into the decision-making. Mm-hmm. So let's say, for example, hypothetically, you know, a blue-collar job might be, if you're making automated recommendations, the data may be biased toward males performing well in a job that requires, you know, lifting of heavy objects. Is there anything that Randstad or that your teams are doing to measure or mitigate the impact of bias seeping into automated decision making?
Well, absolutely, and this is a theme that of course comes back in many of your podcasts, and I'm welcome that, because we need to talk about it, right? And first of all, I would say we have to be careful what we call an AI, because at the end of the day, take for example a chatbot. Many of the steps that a chatbot does, yeah, it's not AI; it's just you know, an if then this, and then if this, then that kind of routine. So I do think we have a responsibility, all of us, to educate the legislations and everybody, that all the stakeholders in this debate, to not throw everything on the AI theme and not put a sticker AI on it. But let's get to the AI, because we do use it, for example, in matching. Then, of course, the next part is making sure, do you have enough data? And do you have then unbiased data? And even if you have unbiased data, what does then the algorithm work in an unbiased way? Now, this is a fast developing field, and we work with universities and other experts to challenge ourselves. We have created a number of very clear AI principles. We'll provide you the link, because they're on our websites. We talk about them openly, because we want to do HR services in the right way. We're the market leader. Okay? We are the global market leader. At a good day, we have 700,000 people working from us in a temporary job, you know, anywhere in the world. We place more than 200,000 people, you know, actively in perm jobs, and 2 million altogether. It's, you know, it's big numbers. So we want to do it in the right way. So we said AI principles. We learned, we did experiments, we made our fair share of mistakes. But we put some very clear guardrails in technology-wise on AI, and we always let the human do the final choice. Now, humans can be biased too, eh? Let's be clear. So we educate our consultants, and we educate our clients, because at the end of the day, we can do everything right. But then the client also needs the right thing. And if the client asks us to, you know, only select, well, let's say your white males, then we should reject them too. So bias is a big topic, and it takes human intervention, it takes technology interventions, and it takes learning. We have to all, you know, embrace it. It's unstoppable, but we have to do it in the right way. And that's a fast developing science. And I'm happy that you put a podcast on it, because we need to talk about it. Right?
Absolutely. Now, you saw in the opening, I struggle to even pronounce your last name. So I clearly have a bias toward American perspective.
We'll not ask you to do it again. Just do it once was enough. Yeah.
Thank you. I did my best. Something I'd love to know is with your vantage point from Europe, are there differences in digital adoption trends when it comes to the recruiting space in Europe versus what you see in the US?
Well, that's interesting. We have an approach, we call that customer delight. And with customer delight, I'm also responsible for marketing and communications in Randstad. And this is something that is between marketing and IT, because what we do is we do an almost scientific research of satisfaction drivers of both talents, clients, as well as our own employees. And out of that picture, we do that in 23 markets around the world, we can really compare who drives what. And I can tell you then, it's in every market the same thing. The number one driver for customer delight is what we call humaneness. And humaneness means, don't treat me as a number, treat me as a person. I don't mind if you reject me for the job, but give me a sign, give me some feedback, or just give me a call saying, look, we're sorry for you, we're going to do something else. That humaneness is not very technology driven, it's very consistently human driven. And that's why our strategy is what we call tech and touch, is that combination of people and technology, because in the HR market space, a full digital model is still not very successful. Eventually, and people want to have a job, or when a client accepts a talent, then they still want to see each other, smell each other, feel each other. That human factor is undeniable in our market, which is, thank God, right? That makes it fun. However, if you then compare US and the Netherlands, or US and Europe, there's differences. Compliance and legislation and things like collective labor laws is a big thing in Europe. So there's lots of complexity, and each country is different in that. But then again, if you look at states, California is famous for it. There's also many states differences in the US. So we are very used to handling these kind of complexities and still connect them to each other. In terms of technology adoption, many of the HR tech startups, and we have scanned more than 4,000 of them. We have a very active innovation fund that looks at all these HR tech startups. Most of them are funded in the US, and they tend to start in the US. But there's a fair chunk of companies that also do Europe. So technology-wise, the main driver comes out of the innovation, comes out of the US, but the adoption is, well, I would say roughly the same. I don't see that much difference between Europe and the US in terms of market adoption of these new technologies.
So you're the technology evangelist at a company that is fundamentally a people first, or a human to human company. What do you say to leaders at your clients or prospective clients that say, you know, we don't need technology to intervene here. We want more human touch. We want, to your point, you know, we want an experience that is human first, and where candidates feel like they're being engaged and listened to. We want less technology and more ability to emphasize the humanness of our process. How would you say, you know, what's your counter argument to a leader at a client or prospective client that feels like that?
Well, first of all, positive thing is, I think they recognize that humaneness is and probably the biggest factor of success. So I would applaud at least on the philosophy. And then the good news is, you don't really have to do the one thing and don't do the other. It's, you can do both. And we talked about the chatbot, but it's all about deep understanding. Because, you know, let's face it, if you're a temp worker, you don't want to call a consultant and have a good conversation of why you want to take the day off, right? You just want to add it into your app and get rid of it. If you want to exchange a shift with a coworker, it should be easy, and nobody should care about, you know, how human that experience is. It just had like your banking app that should work and do the stuff. But if you talk about your career, then you want to have a deep personal conversation. And I can tell you, you can have the best personal conversation with a person advising on the career, but if you don't know the job market, if you don't have data about how jobs are developing, what, you know, how much are they in demand, how much money can you earn with it, and how relevant are your skills in the future for it, then that deeply personal conversation doesn't make sense either. So what our dream is to be that best personal engagement opportunity driven by deep market insights. That's why I build all my global data lakes. That's why I have a big combination of all kinds of market insights, public, and of course, our own insights combined into driving that kind of fact-based, yet very human interactions. Because let's fake it, I don't know how it works for you then, but I have three kids, and if they're looking at their careers, who advises them, right? Their friends, maybe me, but I don't know which sector they want to go. Who has market data and still can give you personal advice? That's our mission. We want to be that personal advisor, that trusted advisor for 500 million people in 2030. That's our big dream.
So you have three kids. I have two. Mine are 12 and 14. And I think about some of the conversations I have with them, projecting, you know, what are the skills that might be relevant in a decade, that are future-proof, call it. Yeah. What do you think? What would you encourage your kids to invest in terms of skills development now? You think will never be good kind of candidates for automation in the future workforce?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you made the statement that there's all kinds of sources about, you know, whether AI will reduce work or be more. I'm with you. I think I'm positive. But I'm very clear, also very convinced it will not be the same kind of jobs that we have today. Who have thought that we are actually hiring conversational AI specialists? You know, 5 years ago, nobody would even have known what you meant with that. So eventually, I think agility to change, being maybe openness, you know, intellectual curiosity, with also some personal risk taking of, hey, I don't know how to do this, but I'm still going to try it. That's, if you can bring that to your kids, that's the very best skill to have. Because at the end of the day, whatever the jobs are going to do, it will not be the job that we think it will be most likely in 10 years from now. So it starts with that agility, openness, and also being able to accept failure, because it will not work in the first time. Now, if you talk about hard skills, clearly anything data, I would encourage. Something around business, like economics, financials, just understanding the basics of that, and then combining that with something human, sociology, psychology, because at the end of the day, AI will not take away or replace humanness. So, and you always see it, the simple middleman jobs disappear, but what is left is either the very personal caretakers, people in hospitals that do intakes and work with you, and the very intellectual, AI developers, whatever. The middle part is the part that will change most. So anything that, depending on how intellectual you want to be, but that takes you toward that kind of world, I would encourage. Do you agree? What do you advise your kids?
My thinking, the skills that are future-proof are anything that requires creativity, empathy, leadership. I say frequently on this show, anything that can be predicted is better left to machines, but anything that requires rational thinking is better left to humans. And now you could debate, maybe in 50 years, we have what we call AGI or artificial general intelligence. And maybe, you know, we can think of, you know, sentient machines. But realistically, those are innately human skills that I think will complement prediction tasks that I think are better left to machines. So I encourage my kids to invest in skills like that are never going to be good candidates for autonomous intervention.
True. And there's always a lot of complaints about kids spending so much time on videos, games and social media. But the good thing is they are very skilled in social interaction and handling that kind of subtle references and handling 20 chats at the same time. I think that's a pretty interesting skill, given what we just debated for the future.
I mean, 25 years ago, there was essentially no World Wide Web, and we couldn't imagine the implications on the labor market of the internet or the web on top of the internet. And no one would disagree now that it changed the world for the better. You know, there was a time when everyone was bemoaning the loss of print media jobs and what's going to happen to newspapers. And you know what? The internet has been a net poor impact, or adversely impacted print media. But nobody would argue that that's a bad thing, right? Oh, with all the amazing new, not just careers, but innovations and ways, it's made the world smaller and changed our lives. AI-driven automation is the same way. You know, in a decade, we're going to look at a completely reimagined workforce, talent pool, need for skills, jobs, and we won't even be able to fathom that, a decade previously, say in 2022, we were even having to debate, the merits of more automation, better personalization, kind of this collaboration between humans and machines. Yeah, you agree with that?
It's going to be a very interesting ride. Yeah, I agree with that. And of course, there will be stuff that goes wrong and we'll make mistakes. But therefore, principles, values, and some guardrails are important. So we do challenge ourselves, hey, is this a good development, or should we put some kind of restriction on it? I encourage that debate. We're in the middle of heavy debates with legislators on where AI regulation is going in Europe, for example, and they take HR as their highest risk category. Now, I'm not 100% sure whether that's fair or not, but I'm welcome to the debate. So let's talk about it, right? Let's encourage that, because that will influence a lot of those new jobs that we will develop in. But let's agree that in 10 years from now, we do this podcast again, then, and see what where the world went to.
hope we get that opportunity. So in terms of, you mentioned regulation, in the US, we're always very careful to make sure we don't go astray of European regulations like GDPR. Are there any examples of where, let's say within Randstad, you're advocating for the development of some technology, but your ability to innovate is constrained by any kind of regulatory frameworks?
Well, back to your bias example. It's very hard to check on bias if you're not allowed to have the biased data fields. So, for example, I'm not allowed to register gender. How can I then check that my algorithm is not discriminating for gender? So there is some illogical parts, and we have been successfully finding solutions together with the legislators to get around it. But we have to that was hard work, right? We need to convince people why it was illogical, why to check on that kind of stuff. There's examples, but in general, I would say I've been in banking, I've been a supervisory board member of KPMG, so I know accountancy also a bit. I can tell you HR is still blissfully open field, innovative field compared to many other sectors. So that's a good thing, but it comes with responsibility. That means that we have to take extra care as major player ourselves, you as an influencer, myself as part of a big company. We all play a role in them doing it in the right way.
So beyond like the chatbot example that you mentioned, which I think is a great example, what's one thing that you think will be different in 10 years about the recruitment process from the perspective of a candidate?
Well, I don't want to just jump on something popular to shout at, but the whole metaverse debate is, of course, interesting, right? I've been actually part of Second Life when it was launched. We even did a recruitment event then. Probably 3 people showed up, but it was fun, right? And whether it will happen and whether it's being owned by Facebook, you can debate. But at the end of the day, just look at what happened in the last 2 years. We went to a full hybrid setup with physical and virtual work, and people are now used to it, and everybody knows how to use Zoom and all that stuff, or Teams or Google. It doesn't matter. It's just, I know this, let me do this. So I think that same kind of natural adaption, very fast adaption, will come also to a virtual world or a meta virtual world. And that can give you very interesting opportunities. I already did some pilots where we onboarded people in safety circumstances. So you take on your Google, or was it, I can't remember, but one of those glasses, and you walk into a magazine or store warehouse, and then you need to indicate where there are safety hazards, and if you did it wrong, certainly there would be fire around you. And we have seen some amazing adaption of people, in a realistic way. So I look forward to that kind of virtual training in a much bigger scale than we do now. We're just starting with it. Wait for Apple to launch, probably in the next 2 years or so. But once Apple and Google and Facebook truly figured out a wearable that everybody likes, then it's off to the races. So in 10 years' time, I think the meta world will be real.
Brilliant example. You know, Renee, in over 110 episodes we've published, you're the first person to mention Second Life, the original metaverse. I love it. I love the reference. You and I and probably only a handful of our listeners are old enough to remember Second Life.
Is that exciting or depressing? I'll leave that to the watchers or the audience. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. We'll look for feedback in the comments. Well, Renee, I got to get you off the hot seat. It feels like this went by way too quickly, but not without asking answering one last question. You've had an amazing, distinguished career. Looking back on the arc of your career, what's your advice for a younger version of Renee?
Yeah, I love that question. I would say, relax and enjoy the ride. Because when you're young, you're insecure. You think, oh, I need to get that job and I want to be that. Oh, it's such an amazing role. Can I be a CIO? But nobody wants me. And you underestimate how open the world is for you if you're starting your career. You can basically be anywhere, do anything you like, if you just put your mind to it. And of course, not everything works, and sometimes it fails. But there's so much opportunity to learn and to be flexible. There's so much ways you can develop your career. Be more relaxed about it, be more confident, enjoy the experience. That's I think the best advice I could give my younger self, but anybody out there listening. And it doesn't matter whether you're 25 or to be 40 or even 50 or 60. There's always different jobs you can go nowadays. There's so much different ways you can develop your skills in cheap ways, right? It doesn't cost any money. You can be a Python developer in 3 months and go different routes if you want to, or you can go into healthcare. There's people want to have your support way more than you think. But it takes somebody that shows you that and gives you that insight into the marketplace. So find somebody that can coach you. Come to a company that knows the market and just enjoy the ride.
Renee, let's make sure your kids listen to this and my kids listen to it, because that's great advice.
Thank you.
So, where can our audience learn more about the work that you're doing, about the perspectives on the future of work that you've shared? Any place you could point them to?
Yeah, well we publish some insightful trends in the labor market. We'll make sure we add the links to your podcast then. If you want to have some external experts, I love the advice of Jos Bershon. Very insightful how he brings everything together. Lots of interest there. And we also have a lot of publications on our job board, monster.com, which is also, I think, very helpful, certainly if you're trying to expand your horizons. We'll make sure that the links are in the podcast.
Excellent. And I'll make sure in the show notes for the episode, we include those as well.
Thank you.
Renee, we're going to definitely continue this conversation. Like you said, as some of these trends play out, you're going to come back on the hot seat and we're going to have another version of this. How does that sound?
I really enjoyed this conversation. And there's so much things happening in the world of HR and the world of work and AI. So I can imagine that there will be plenty of topics. Always happy to come back.
Excellent. Well, likewise, I love this one. Thanks for hanging out. Well, that's all the time that we have for this week. Great discussion with Renee. We are going to be back next week with another fascinating guest. I'm your host, Dan Turchin, for AI and the Future of Work.